All right, folks, we're about to get this show started, so if you're rumbling on up, pepping the stage. Oh, they are. Yeah, look at that. I even got some fist pumping back there. Welcome. This is the first ever. This is the first time we've ever done this. First time we've ever had this group of people. They'll all be on stage in a moment. This is the SMX Insiders live podcast mashup. I'm Jason Wygant. This is Jason Thomas. Somehow they accidentally let our friend Steve Mathis be part of the show. Everybody else on the stage will be a big... highly respected part of the industry. It's cool to have everybody together.
Yeah, this is awesome. You know, we do this show every Tuesday. You guys get to see it every Thursday. And it's really starting to grow. And to be able to add the levels of talent who, they all have their own shows, right? Some of them are part of the SMX network. But this is going to be a very unique experience to have all of these voices. And at the very end, they'll all be up here together conversing. And it's going to be an interesting industry first. Should be a great time.
We honestly hope they're arguing. And if it doesn't, with you and Mathis up here, the chances are high.
Steve and I can fill that void, no problem.
You guys will handle the arguing.
It's not so much that we argue, he's just wrong a lot.
Okay. Like,
I don't want to argue.
Sometimes you have to set him straight, and that still won't happen today. So we want to bring the first person on up.
Let's do it.
All right, this is the greatest of all time.
15 championships, I believe.
Yep.
Something like that.
One half of the Title 24 podcast. Let's welcome Ricky Carmichael to the stage. You see, they get cheers.
I don't deserve cheers.
You got cheers. You got cheers. Where do you want to be?
Wherever you want to sit,
there
sir.
There you go.
It's your
winners sit, winners sit where they
nice
want to sit.
Barbecue.
Winners sit where they want to sit.
What's up, everybody? How is everyone? Good?
Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome to see you guys. Remember last year, there was like 10 people. Now we got a good crowd this year.
It must have been because of Jace and Steve, I guess.
Well, it's,
they made the difference, I guess.
There you go.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Hey, I was going to ask you this, man. In all your racing, did you got to race in the Charlotte, the Speedway, what, maybe one or two times?
Twice, 97
yeah.
and 98.
So it's kind of interesting. This is like a hole in the schedule we've had for ages to finally get a race like established in this region. The dirt, the riders love the dirt. Fans
yes.
are good. It should be good.
This dirt was very, it looks to be similar to when I raced back here in 97 and 98, which I absolutely loved it racing over at the Speedway. Just the fast pace and somewhat similar to this, not quite as much MX influence back then as what you see at the SMX track, which SMX is being a hybrid track, but nevertheless, it was a lot of fun, and it's always great to be back here, and I think that the Charlotte area in general has some really, really core fans, and it's a great place to have a SMX realm.
That's what I'm saying. It needed it. You guys pumped that we're here? You guys pumped that we're here?
I'm happy to be here. I keep saying this, and I never do it. I'm like non-committal about it, but one year, I'm going to camp out and just do the whole deal. But the problem is, see, I got to work the next day. You guys get to have fun and watch the races on Saturday, right?
There's you get about 100 people saying, come on over right now.
All right.
Anybody got an opportunity, an opening? Yeah. Saturday, maybe?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. One thing I want to ask, we had a bunch of calls this week planning this.
Yeah.
And you had some hot takes on the Chase Sexton, Jet Lawrence battle that everyone's excited about.
Right.
So give us a little bit of this.
Yeah, so on our pre-production calls that we have each week before the broadcast to go over things and somewhat bench race and think of ideas to bring to the viewers at home for all of you guys that are watching on Peacock or whatever network of NBC that we're on, whether it's USA on that weekend. They were asking me of what I thought. Jet's coming back and what Chase is, what I thought of Chase. And, you know, there were some different opinions. Some riders think that all the pressure is on Jet, and some think that all the pressure is on Chase. And for me personally, is what I told everyone on that call, is that I feel like Chase has all the pressure and that Jet doesn't have that much pressure. And the reason that I say that, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for all of these guys, okay, I really do. They can do way gnarlier things on a dirt bike than I ever could do. Chase, if you look back at his career, and one thing that he is so good at is he's super dependable, right? If we had RCH again, like I'm trying to hire that guy. You know he's gonna go. You know he's gonna show up. And I always feel like he's, you know, he's been under the guys that he's raced in the past have casted some really big shadows. You name them, Eli Tomac in the early days, Austin Faulkner, right? He's like always kind of just right there under their shadow. And then, so you look at his career, because he's so dependable, he's so strong, and he never gets up, and he's always taking it on the chin. But every time he's won, not everyone, but just about every one of his titles, you look back, Austin Faulkner went down and blew his ACL out, and Chase lost. Trust me, I get it. You have to be in there to win it, and that is half the battle. I've won some championships like that, and vice versa. And then you go to his Supercross championship, Eli tore his Achilles. And then you go to the Pro Motocross championship this year, and unfortunately, Jet got hurt. So when you're digging through everything and you're doing your research, you have to look at, okay, what were the scenarios? Were all the riders in there, and was it legit? And it's very similar to kind of like Ryan Dungey and the Ryan Villopoto battles back in the day. And so that's what I was saying. I'm like, well, in my opinion, I think that like what I'm looking forward to and seeing for this weekend, number one, is Jet being back, and how does he respond? And then most importantly, how does Chase respond? Because in my mind, if Chase doesn't go out there and beat Jet, then it's going to look like he won, you know, there's an asterisk there.
Yeah, and
I hate to talk like that,
right.
But it's, prove me wrong.
Yeah.
Like, prove me wrong. I'm here for it. You guys can throw jabs at me. Some of y'all probably, yes, actually, probably some of you guys throw shade at me on social media, but no.
Yeah, they're probably sitting, they walk amongst us.
That's just me. That was
just
me.
I'm kidding.
They walk amongst us.
So
no,
anyhow.
I think... two things there. One, you know, there's a saying there's never an asterisk on a championship, but, right, all your points are valid. All your points are valid, and I lived through this with Chad Reed, because every championship he had, guess who was missing? The top guy the year before, right? So,
yeah.
Like, there is both sides to that coin. The awesome part now is Chase gets to go out and prove it, right? Like, whether it's these three, or whether it's in 2025, he can go erase all of that talk. But I do love your point about the pressure, because I'm telling you, if Jet wins tomorrow, and I think it's a huge uphill climb for Jet to win tomorrow. I even told you earlier.
I don't think
he can, just because it's too early.
Yeah.
If he does, sayonara. Like, it is a really, really powerful statement if Jet could come back and win tomorrow.
And one last thing on this topic, because I know we got some other great guys to come up on this panel that I'm really excited to listen to. But when you start weighing out the pluses and the minuses with both of these riders that we're referring to, you know, you take how strong and how resilient that Chase Sexton is, and how he's so dependable, and he's fast, and he's in shape. But then you take Jet Lawrence, he's fast, he's in shape. I think he has a little bit better bike skill. I think he's pretty sound mentally. He is one with the toughest competitors in the championship. And I just feel like that's a little bit better, you know, and I feel like at the end of the day, he outweighs everyone else because of that. Now, I could be completely wrong, and what I love about SMX is the format. I think that it caters. Some guys are better at managing a three-race playoff than they are a 17-round Supercross series, and that's just the facts. And I think of a guy like Ken Roczen. I think of a guy like Justin Barcia, who are so good at these style of events and like a playoff scenario. So it'll be interesting to see. And while I say all this, I mean this with full respect for Chase. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, but I don't feel like I'm doing my job properly from an analyst if I don't say these things. You know, I'm saying what I believe is true. And, you know, when I'm saying these things, I really do think before I say them and say things in anticipation that you can't refute what I'm saying.
Well, you've earned the right to say it.
Yeah,
that's honestly you've earned the right to say it.
But you say there's no asterisk beside a championship. Now let's go to stick and ball, and I think about the Florida State Seminoles last year.
Oh, geez, here we go. He's just doing that for JT.
I'd rather think about him this year.
So we don't get to go to the playoffs.
Oh, here we go.
Right?
Here we go.
So we made it to we earned the position of the playoffs, but just because our guy can't be the quarterback, he gets injured.
Let's bring out a huge college football fan.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also the host of Pulp MX, Weege and I have several projects with him during the week, too. But let's bring him out, Steve Mathis.
Yeah. And
sure, we can find something to argue about.
Yes, sir.
College football?
Big college football.
Yeah,
fan.
Big college football.
Are you big college football
is
guy?
Is that the one with three downs like the CFL?
Yeah, we call it college football, not university.
Oh, Canadian football.
Oh, university football.
Dude, you know you like the Raiders. Don't even go there.
No, the Raiders, yes, but college, I'm out on that. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. How far down the number of podcast guests said no before you got to me? Like, how many?
A lot. I mean, this is our chance to just tee off. Because Steve has been telling us for months.
I'm going easy because I know I'm getting reciprocated anything I dish out right now. So I'm here for you going at him.
Months of him saying, I'm going to save your stupid show.
Yeah.
Months of this.
Yeah.
Months of this.
Yeah.
And this is where we are. We're the host. You are our guest.
This did not go to plan like I was told. But I'm happy to be
you're
here.
You're going to helicopter in.
Can I play host, co-host?
Yeah, he's co-host. Yeah. You're a guest.
Well, listen, yes. I don't know if you folks listen to Title 2-4, but there's just four here. So where's that other idiot?
Yeah, my guy's on vacation all of a sudden.
I have a theory.
What?
He's not the richest guy here, so he don't want to be here. Because normally he's the richest guy that's standing around. But,
oh, that's what Villa Pardo operates?
We got a guy backstage and RC richer than him.
Oh, he can't compete.
So I think Villa Pardo said, I'm out.
No.
That's how I think he does it.
Oh.
Because I was told he's the world's greatest retired racer.
He is?
Yeah.
Self-proclaimed.
Is there an asterisk on that title?
No.
There's no asterisk on that title.
So where's your buddy at?
He's at a family reunion. Reunion in Utah. My man is at a family reunion in Utah. I said, I'll do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, okay.
Press release said Ricky Carmichael or Ryan Villopoto.
Right,
it was really left open if RV was going to show up.
Well, I'm sticking with my richest man theory. So I'm sticking with that.
He's intimidated. Mathis, you watched practice.
I did.
From
the glorious press box location that Sean Brennan has gotten us. It's fantastic.
Okay.
I have that Santurn dial.
Okay, so give us the Santurn specifically analysis.
That Santurn, well, Malcolm went down in it. Odd.
Oh.
Florida guy, down in the sand.
Okay.
I know you weren't very good in the sand.
Eli Tomac likes the sand.
He said a couple weeks ago he didn't like sand.
I hated the sand.
What?
Straight up.
You destroyed everybody in Southwick every single year.
I know, but
you can be good at something you don't like.
I hated going to Southwick. Absolutely hated it. Like,
what?
A perfect example
sure
is that,
like
now, like when my wife and kids would go to the beach or something, we're like down the Bahamas, they're like, come on to the beach. I'm like, dude, I hate being in the sand. No, I lived a lifetime in it. I hated Southwick.
That is bizarre.
I think I liked Unadilla better than I liked Southwick.
Oh, come on, dude.
You had a butt patch. You know
There's
Dilla.
No way that's true.
I was young then. Who knew?
You know Dilla. So what did you see, at least in the sand?
Outside lines fast.
Okay.
Chase looked great. Eli looked great. Malcolm went down. The end.
All right, there you go, everybody.
That's
why he's a guest.
That's why.
So catch the fever of playoffs and SMX and all that.
Yeah.
I was surprised. We did 19 shows this week. You would love that. You like the hybrid tracks.
I do.
I was waiting for you to tee off on the hybrid tracks.
No, I'm fine with the hybrid tracks. They're really kind of cool. They're kind of neat. You know why? Because these riders, they don't stop bitching about it. It's not easy for them. It's hard. Suspension doesn't work that well. A lot of guys running supercross stuff, but man, those wood chips and sawdust in the back, that is going to get Southwick rough.
So going back to your mechanic days, factory mechanic.
Thank you.
I know. You beat me in Bud's Creek. You guys beat
Bud's Creek first moto. Who can forget?
That's right.
Took Carmichael down.
Straight up. So what would you recommend to your rider as far as suspension setup? It's been a big talk. Last year it was a big talk. Guys showed up with SX settings, some guys MX settings. What in your mind you think would be the best?
I think you got to go SX Supercross stuff and soften it from there. Go down a spring rate if you need to. Go down some air pressure, whatever you need to. But that rhythm section and some of the speed coming in those jumps, you got to go Supercross stuff and then adjust from there. You know how the old Daytona thing went.
I really think you nailed it. Daytona.
Yeah.
Right? I would start at my Daytona setting and work from
there. Which, in our day, your day, you would show up with special Daytona stuff and maybe a little more outdoor stuff. But now, Daytona now, they show up with Supercross stuff, you know?
Yeah, but I still think you need to be softer than
that.
This track caught everybody out with how rough it got.
Dude.
Yeah.
And it will do the same thing tomorrow.
Yeah. Daytona Supercross, ideal setting. Supercross forks, outdoor shock.
Hey, for real though, like...
That's what I raced
tough
with
to,
every
tough to
single
turn,
year.
A little
talking
bit tough
about,
to turn.
Huh?
A little bit tough to turn, though?
No, but
that?
It had ruts.
Yeah.
Talking about mechanic days, though, I mean, you had some great battles with with Stu, some great battles with Chad, but
yep.
really was the guy that beat you in 97.
Oh.
There was two riders that beat you for titles.
Yeah.
Two riders ever so, beat you for championships.
We're going to turn this into a Tim Ferry
that's
podcast.
Right.
That's right.
McGrath beat
happening.
You a couple times. The
Several.
King.
Oh, and
Tim Ferry.
Tim Ferry.
Tim Ferry, buddy, beat him down. Took Ricky down.
When in doubt, play the hits.
Yep. Couldn't handle it.
Hey, he was consistent. And you know what? His consistency probably would really, I think maybe the guy who is most consistent could be the SMX world champion this year.
Like Tim Ferry style. You can use that.
I'm telling you, you guys better watch out for dudes like
Well, Hayden Deegan won last year without winning a race.
We found that out.
Mean,
Deegan
like
did
even
not
Kenny.
Win an overall
yeah.
last
Kenny.
Year.
Listen, I'm not a fan of
Eli.
I'm not a fan of the single, double, triple points. Anybody else with me on
I
that?
I am.
It's
I
great.
Love
you guys like
it.
Oh, awesome. Thumbs down from that guy. That guy gets
Dude, you got one thumb
that,
down?
That guy wins a
Can
pulcher.
You deny it?
That guy wins
Can
a pulcher.
Can you deny the points?
We are huge fans. It's beautiful. It's great. Well done.
These guys are on the payroll, so they're going to love
good.
Single,
it's
double, triple. Yeah. I don't like that part of it, but I like...
But why?
Because it just adds too much, like if you fall in the first turn at the round three, you could go 1-1-5 and lose a championship.
Don't yeah, fall.
Or you could go...
Don't fall.
7-3-1 and win.
Okay, fair, Ricky, fair. But listen, I love everything else about this. I love the hybrid tracks. I like the qualifications into it. I think the riders have really, especially this year, really fought to be here and raced all they could, spent money out of their own pockets in some cases to be here. So I'm a fan of this whole series. I wish the media would get, you know, paid back their travel expenses. But anyways, I just don't like the single, double, triple points. Everything else about this SMX thing is awesome.
Maybe that's why RV is in here.
Yeah, maybe.
We had to
take it out of the Title 24 budget.
Without the single, double, triple, we would have never had the setup we had going into the finale last year. And it'll probably play
100%.
Out this year where there are multiple people all involved that can win. Otherwise, somebody's going to pull away. Somebody's going to have a bad opening round, and it's going to be done. They're going to be out of it. With the triple points at the end, everybody is still in it, which I think is great. If
that's
you want
why, that's why I like it.
It's
that's
great.
Why I
on
like
the payroll.
It.
No, I'm just telling you, like, I was there, and the whole week...
You can't deny it.
No, but I'm saying, yeah. like, in the moment, in between motos, we're like, I don't know, is Jordan Smith going to win the championship? Shimoda? Deegan? Like, that was great. To be
a
part of this.
I thought Roxanne was going
to
win it at once.
Carmichael.
Yeah, what?
You won 8,000 races. If you showed up here, these three SMX, in your day, and you went 1-1-5 and lost the championship and all the money, you'd be so pissed.
But I'd be mad at myself because I fell.
No, you'd be like pissed at this point. You'd be like, I'm the best guy.
I'm just telling you.
You were not afraid to get mad at yourself. I will give you that. You definitely
no,
were
like,
not afraid.
I would have yes. come back. You're like, you idiot. Why'd you fall? I'm like, you're right. I messed
Carmichael
up.
Carmichael wins 27 of 30 races all year, but he loses the SMX crown.
Hey, when the lights are the brightest and the stage is the biggest, you got to step
up.
Got to step up. That's how right. it is.
Let's bring our next guest up from the Gypsy Tales podcast. Let's welcome Jace McElpine.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
And
yeah,
I actually learned something today. Do you know his name is actually Jason?
I did.
I did not know that until this afternoon.
It used to be on, like, his Jason was taken, so I had to go
with
Jason.
That was quite the compliment.
Like, way back in the day, like his media stuff would all say Jason, or
really,
like years ago. Wow.
You go that far back.
JT knows.
Yeah, I've known of him for a long time.
I mean, used to just call him guy with the gnarliest accent. That's what I always called you, like 10, 12 years ago, back in the day.
At least like 15 to 20 years, I would say.
Yeah, 2010. Yeah.
Damn,
getting
bro.
There.
Anyway, welcome to the show.
Thanks
this
for having
awesome.
Me. Thank you, everyone. Yes. Hello, Charlotte. Yep. Pretty happy to be here, to be honest.
Co-host.
Everybody but Steve.
Yeah, your guest.
Everybody
co-host.
But Steve.
Co-host. Yeah.
I'll be co-host.
Anybody out there, they're also these are all also co-hosts. Everybody that attended today. Our production
but
team,
Steve.
Everybody.
I love it. This got a good crowd here tonight. Huge boost from last year. Huge boost
we
from
have
last year.
Big gains. So if you got SMX fever, I feel like on your show all the time, your main thing, you're trying to, how can we make everything bigger and better and improve and bigger and better and
drama.
Improve?
Drama. I'm the drama guy.
Well, are you that mad that there are privateers here?
Slightly, but you know, like it is. I'm learning to deal with it as I'm learning to accept the things that I can't change until I can, in fact, change them. But no, I think that the SMX thing has been amazing because of the way that it has kept guys in the season. So you look at, you know, like Dean Wilson was doing
payroll.
a bunch of races
payroll.
This year. Yeah, yeah. But We had got, you know, we're in late September, early September, and we're still at a Supercross. We're still in a stadium. So, yeah, as far as that goes, I guess you can say I got the fever now.
Do you feel like no one really knew what this could possibly be last year when you heard the inception of the SMX playoffs, and now you're finally seeing a glimpse of what it could be, say, role play 10 years from now?
Yeah, I was definitely a hater. So if anyone was heard the show, probably not this time last year, I'd probably come around. But when the first ideation of it was released, I wasn't like super on board. But now, I mean, I wish we did it sooner. I mean, I'd love to hear what you would think about racing this series. But I think that there's just so many, I guess, storylines that you can follow into these last three races. And I think just the example of Eli Tomac, like we lost Eli Tomac in May. If SMX isn't a thing, we don't see Eli Tomac until January. True. And just for that reason alone, I'm fully on board.
You don't think, or he, you don't think he grinds out Iron Man?
Or Webb. Or Webb, or Kenny, or Jet coming back now, yeah. Or any of them, right?
Cooper.
It's almost like validation. You talked about Justin Barsha talked about it today. It's like, dude, like I'm happy about SMX because now he kind of can somewhat validate his season if he has a good playoff run.
And look, the guys that Jace hates, the privateers, the guys further back, they're going to make a lot of money. It's awesome. I'm bugging you. But, like, basically, if you don't make the main event, you're coming away with, like, $6,000 to $8,000 at all three races, you know, like even not making any of the mains. And
even if you don't make the main.
Yeah.
If you missed it by one, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you can get, like, so 6,000 something.
You're still doing all right for those guys, so which is awesome. You know, it's, and they earned it for racing so well all year.
That's right.
Colt Nichols was a really good example of that last year. Like, he was one guy that I looked at in terms of, like, really cutting through the noise of, like, is this good? And it's like, okay, Colt Nichols goes to a dealership, buys a motorcycle, drives himself to the races, like, yes, this is good. Like, he did not have to do that. That is so much effort and work to go through. And he went and made a grip of money. So
I remember October 22 at the press conference, LA Coliseum, and I'm listening to everything, the format. And you ever see a dog? They're confused, like their head's cocked to the side. I remember staring at the stage like that, trying to figure out what this was going to be. And then I saw the payout and the prize, and I was like, I'm in. Like, I immediately was like, this is amazing for everybody. Like, I'm all in.
That's cutting through the noise. You saw the money, you're good.
I wasn't even eligible for any of it, but I was so happy for the riders. This is a great thing.
All right, we got one more co-host to bring on up. You may have heard of him. Specifically, I think the main thing he's known for is his podcast, Bubba's
Big
World.
Yeah, podcast.
He also used to race.
Right, yeah, yeah.
He raced?
He erased. He did race, yeah. Let's bring out.
There he is.
Yeah, the fastest man on the planet. You did race, or are you just a podcast guy? You did race back in the day?
My kids aren't here, so yeah, I guess I used to. I used
they
to
don't.
Race
they
up
don't
here.
Remember. They don't respect.
Nah, YouTube daddy right here. YouTube.
Okay. Hey, another awesome thing. Like, look, I did it on one of the million shows I did today. I was like, hey, tomorrow I'll be on the broadcast with Ricky Carmichael and James Stewart. Like, we got you two guys in the booth together. How awesome is that? Right? How cool is that? Like, that's not on the bingo card. 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
When they had separate gear guys and neither one could talk to anybody? Yeah. No, not on the big one.
Well, I'd love to go in a time machine and go to Unadilla 05, 06.
Got negative.
When you guys were laying on the ground
just
again,
got
I go,
negative.
Then flash forward
hey,
to today.
JS, why do you have to bring that up?
Hey, just I'm just
negative.
Here.
Just,
this is what we're here for.
You.
This is the mashup.
Hey,
I'm mashing.
Full disclosure,
I'm just mashing.
In full disclosure, straight up, we talked about how, like, the three-round playoff and how that would work. And Steve, you kind of pinpointed it a little bit. I would be, like, this would be incredibly tough to challenge and rival James in a similar situation like this.
That's why we didn't have it. I mean, because I was already blown out by all the outdoors, but I would have died for this.
Oh, you won!
Oh, I would have been like, bumming. I'm like, dude,
$1 million?
I got my work cut out for me.
Yeah,
I think the only thing that would have saved me is no whoops. I would have at least kept it closer.
He's got a point.
I mean, he don't give himself credit. He was good. You got better, especially. I mean, Orlando 07 was. I mean, you had me in my limit. You know, so I was happy you retired.
I didn't have it yet your limit high enough. You beat me.
Well, I didn't have no choice. I couldn't live that down. I had the barber there, everybody. You can't let somebody beat you and walk off the stage.
I don't know if you like noticed this, but with James, a lot of it was win or die.
It was. Unadilla would have probably happened a lot more if I had this format.
But three rounds, James Stewart versus Ricky Carmichael.
Oh, he's got me, 100%.
It would have been an absolute send fest for $1 million check at the end of it.
I might have had to ride a wide bike on you in the SMX. Maybe.
I mean,
just because there ain't no way I was going
to
beat
skinny
him.
Bike again? You ever rode a skinny bike next to him?
I mean, I have. I have.
Bud's Creek 03. Not wide enough.
Oh.
First moto. Only first moto.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, he was never in front of
coffee. Have I been punked? Am I walking into an RC roast?
No, it's negative. It's negative.
It is negative.
It is very negative.
It is negative. You know what, though? We were mentioning the $1 million. You would have loved to have had this to have a shot to beat him. Is it even about the $1 million?
No, it's not. I mean, it would have been nice going to the bank with it, of course. But, no, it was just, I mean, when I raised him, it was literally about just trying to win.
It was all
like
pride.
I knew every time I beat him or he beat me, like that's it. Like that's the top of the peak. So like it wouldn't have been about the money. The money would have been nice, of course, but I mean
it was pride,
yeah,
I think.
It's
pride. You know, it was pride. We both knew that we were giving it 120%. And I think at least for me, and I think I could speak for you from this standpoint, is I think that the mutual respect that we had for each other as competitors, it was second to none. And that's what made it special.
So I have a question for both of you. At what point, or did you ever, when you're racing, right, and both of you and myself would race for a long time, right, at what point did both of you start thinking about the legacy you were going to leave behind, right? Because you're doing all this winning, you're setting records and championships. I mean, you guys were each the most popular rider in the sport at your given time. Was there a moment you're like, okay, I need this championship, like this is what I'm going to be remembered by in the history of the sport? Did that ever happen for either of you?
I mean, for me, I wasn't worried about that when I was racing. It was always just go out, win as much as you can, win as many titles as you can, and ride off into the sunset. So no, I wasn't really worried about building any legacy. It was just going out and trying to fend off guys like James. And you know, now that I've gotten older, I appreciate what I've been able to accomplish. But I think when you're in a situation like what James and I are in, and things are happening just so incredibly fast, you don't have time to really grasp onto it. And it was several years later when James was winning a lot and other guys started winning a lot and they're racking up these wins, these championships, and then you see your name at the top of a lot of these lists, and that's when it really kind of set in for me. I'm like, wow, I was able to be very successful at what I did. But in the moment, at least for me, I wasn't thinking about it.
Do you think maybe stopping at 27 is part of
things that? Are different. I was listening to McEnroe at the U.S. Open last week talking about even the tennis players. The guys are going a little bit deeper, a lot longer. It's just a generational change, I think, that has happened over the last probably 15 years where riders are going longer before they retire.
Yeah, I mean, just like the bikes, equipment, training, everything's different. It seems like it's more, you know, they kind of have a set program. Like, I think with us, like, the bikes were, I wouldn't say harder to ride, but they wasn't as good. So everything from nutrition, bikes, everybody has a program. So I think you can kind of go longer. But kind of answer your question on the legacy, for me, it was when I wasn't winning anymore. Then I had to talk about when I did win, I won a lot of races. My legacy is pretty good. That's because I couldn't win. So I probably back with Benny Bloss, I was really thinking.
It's always like, just Benny Bloss.
Legacy, like when I'm like in 10th place, I keep saying I battled him with him, but he was gone.
So
I was there. I was there. I could make 1.5 motors.
Benny co-hosted the Pulp Show with me like a month ago. You guys remember that? And Benny was like, "That's awesome, man. It's awesome." He says that. Benny does not take offense to that.
What
so
race? Was there a particular race that
I
always told this story.
No, I'm not.
Negative. Like it was just no. Dude, it was. Yeah. It was my last race, Washougal, and I wasn't even battling. The dude was gone. I was out by myself. Actually, the fans were
keeping me. Yeah,
but you
had to be injured or something. No. Benny, I have a lot of respect for you.
No, I mean, I just had some emotional problems going on, but no. No, I was just, you know, and speaking of that, I felt like that when I was watching Eli this year. Like, there's a sense when you cut it off mentally in your head, that's what happened to me at Washougal. Like, I was just having my first kid, you know, there was things going on in the team, but I wasn't the James Stewart that showed up, you know, earlier that year before, you know, the Dungey incident. It's like I was thinking about, all right, well, maybe fifth place, all right, this, and I was done. So for me, the personally, I was either all in winning or battling or not battling with Benny in 10th place. Like, it was the same effort, same everything, but my mind was different.
Why couldn't your mind be there in, like, 07 in Orlando?
Because of you. Kept you going.
I just feel like, at least I felt this way racing, and we talked about it on your podcast, is I just felt like there was always something just a little bit extra that both him and I did when we were racing each other. And I think a lot of it has to do with the history and how we grew up together and grew up kind of the, you know, same way with nothing.
What I wonder, though, is, like, I don't want to be, I am one of those guys complaining about the clouds in the sky and walking uphill to school both ways. But
all the time.
Yeah. But I don't want to be that guy.
Made a career on it.
I think you do.
I don't want to be that guy, but I do feel your era was so special. I really do. Looking back on it, I don't know if it's the two strokes, you two Florida guys.
Aluminum chassis, steel chassis. Yeah, fuel injection.
I just want to think it was super special, and I don't know if we'll ever get there again.
I completely agree.
Well, yes. But what makes it? But why do you guys?
I have
what
a theory.
Makes
why?
It any more special than what we're witnessing right now?
I know. I don't know.
Here's what I think. You were winning really young, and you just kept winning, and you were winning really. It was like we knew this collision course was in route for 10 years before you finally raced each other. If you look at even 5 years ago, it was Jet Lawrence. He was barely on the radar. Chase Sexton was like the second or third best guy. We've seen so many ups and downs. You two are the only guys that, like, yep, they just started winning at age 7, and they just kept on winning, and no one could beat them until they raced each other.
Yeah.
That's a long runway
to
be like, I know one thing, that guy's really good, and that guy's really good, and there's no asterisks, no questions. We don't need a bench race. We just know these two guys are awesome. Yeah. You don't get that purity
you guys
very
agree?
Often.
You guys agree on that?
I think thank you. Thank you. I feel like we grew up in a special time for sure. I mean, with the ever-evolving chassis deal with, like, again, steel chassis, aluminum chassis, then two-stroke to four-stroke, then back to two-stroke, and then fuel injection coming in. And it was an interesting time. And I think I'm happy that we grew up and raced in that era, because I learned so much stuff to be able to help me with what works on setup, what doesn't work on setup, and all these situations that I was in.
And let's face it, mechanics were better back then, too.
Yeah, here we go.
Absolutely.
He learned all this stuff, and he asked you what setup to use out here.
What are they now, then?
Parts
changers?
Hey, we did do our tires back in the day. These guys never changed a tire.
I always felt like there are very few guys. McGrath was one. Ricky was one. James was one. I think RV maybe at certain times. But there are very few guys that can go in and absolutely suck the life out of the competition to where everybody goes to the line knowing that they're not going to win today.
And from pretty much day one.
They already know that they're not going to win today, right? And when James was at his best, when Ricky was at his best, McGrath, like, everybody else was just like, well, we're going to go through the motions today, but we're not winning. We're not winning.
You know, speaking of that, and, like, I appreciate everything you guys are saying, but I also think personalities and just, you know, the difference back when me and him raced, like, I was thinking about it as we were talking. Pretty much every time we raced, like, one of us probably crashed. Like, so you kind of knew it was, like, that's all they had. Like, I crashed a lot. Like, there were sometimes you crashed. But truthfully, me, like, I think what we're witnessing with Jet Lawrence, Chase Sexton, like, some of the rods that they had, some of the best rods I've ever seen. Like, and
100%.
I think it's maybe personalities or whatever it is that we might not see it the same, but I don't see much difference watching those dudes out there, like, racing. Like, they're riding really good. And truthfully, I mean, I'll always remember what Chase did at Hangtown.
Second last moto to first.
Like, you know, Jet Lawrence, like, he, for a while, he had those guys kind of like we were. Like, they were going to the gate not thinking about beating them. Chase just did that this outdoor season. So it's there. I don't know what it is that we don't quantify or whatnot, but
their stories are still being written too. Their stories are still being written. So,
well, I think with you guys, like, particularly when you were racing and you guys were racing together, you were both pushing each other to just such an insane level. And I feel like, you know, if you added, let's say, Jet into that era, like, you'd probably see him either win or crash. And you know what I mean? Like, I feel like you guys were just each other's kryptonite. to where it made you at 100% at all times, and yeah. the best man kind of won, you know. And I think you see, like, Jet 24-0. I mean, I don't think we saw Jet ride that fast in terms of 22.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, sorry, boys.
They got two more.
But you know what I mean? It's like he doesn't quite have that person that can take him to 100%. And I think that's why
it
just hits a little bit different.
Orlando 07 to me will always be the one where you want to see where they can go. You want to see where this can get pushed to. Because I was in that race.
See how weird this gets?
I was in that race, and every time they went by, which was multiple times, I was like, I remember audibly speaking out loud, like, mother of God, what are they doing? Because you guys were at the pinnacle right there. Right? That was it.
Think of High Point and Red Bud, two races where you two guys, how fast do you want to go? Because I'll go that fast, you know?
Yeah. Which year? I don't remember one year.
Well, I can't even.
The High Point ended poorly for you.
Yeah, I was laid out.
Did I race High Point in 07? I can't even remember.
Yeah, before that. You were by yourself.
You won everything up to Millville.
I woke up, put my socks on.
I've had a lot of fun since 07, everybody. I'm just going to tell you that.
No, 06? I don't know. High Point 06?
No, we had...
Was that when you went...
Yeah, I think about what would have been if I wouldn't have crashed. But no, I think it is a cool thing. When I watch old videos, like when I watch us race, we don't look slow. Like even compared to these guys.
Dude.
What? Really?
Yeah, you on your own now.
I'll send you some of my home movies.
I can tell you, as one slow person on a motorcycle, you're not slow at any point ever.
Go watch Atlanta Supercross 1997.
Oh, well, that means
back
then, yeah. Well, yeah.
Timmy looked fast, though.
Timmy won a career going double single. I mean, I get it.
All right, we got fan questions. Okay. Are we going to do it? Are we time for this?
Let's do the fan questions.
These guys are excited about this.
Bring the heat.
Yep, go ahead. Where are you from? What's your name? What you got?
Oh, we came here from South Florida.
Okay. Nice.
Here.
Oh, where at?
Jupiter, Florida.
Oh,
cool.
Big money right here.
Big golf guy.
Yeah, golf, huge. So question for both you, RC, and Stu. So Steve has broken the news that like Phil Nicoletti is start coach for some of the big guys in the field right now. I wanted to see if back in the day if there was anybody that like maybe you two listened to, maybe it was a Roncada, or maybe it was maybe somebody like Tim Ferry who maybe gave you tips. Because it seems like it's a lot more friendly now than it was back in your
day. Oh, it's way friendlier now.
Yeah, which... What is he starting?
Nicoletti is giving a lot of guys tips on how to get starts, even though he's on the gate battling them. Yeah. Like Sexton said, Phil, help my starts. They're not even on the same team. There are some other teams that have asked Phil
to... Is it too friendly?
You know, maybe you ride know their bikes. Was Jeff Emig helped me out quite a bit.
Oh, you did have that. Okay.
Like older guys like that at the time. Larry Ward, when he was my teammate, he helped me out quite a bit. I always go back to this. It was 2000. Larry Ward and I were Factory Kawasaki teammates, and there was some gnarly jump, and he just came over to me in the rig, and he's like, dude, why are you even worried about jumping this? You're not going to be able to do it for 20 laps in a row, so quit worrying about it. You are fretting over something that you're not even going to do in the main event. And as soon as he gave me that little hint, I took that with me for the rest of my career for the most part. And like, when James would do some gnarly stuff on the bike, if I knew I couldn't do it, those were nights where I'd just basically say, well, I'm going to surrender to second. I'm going to do the best I can and try to make up as much time as I can on the track everywhere else. And if it works out, it does. If not,
and I knew that was his game plan, too. So I was like, all right, yeah. So, but, yeah, my teammate was Dirty Dog over here.
Great.
Timmy.
Tim Ferry.
He pushed you to the perfect season.
Oh, he pushed me all right.
Off the track.
Who was your teammate at Factory Cali like your first year? I can't even remember. Ezra, right?
Yeah, Yogi was. And
Carpenter?
Roncada?
No, they didn't.
Burner?
I almost said something, but no. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I keep that for the show.
Okay.
Roncada. I had Paul Carpenter for a minute. Michael Byrne.
Yeah, Byrne.
Oh, Byrne.
Yeah, Come on, boys. Come on. Aussie.
Yeah.
But were there guys, even when you were really young, maybe not your factory days, were there guys when you were like 12 or something that you would ask stuff from?
I'd be honest. Fro was really cool to me, like when I was on 80s and stuff like that. McGrath, Lampson, those guys. But you know, speaking of like the era, maybe some of the things going back to the conversation we were talking about, the why we see things different, is because we didn't talk to people like that. Like there wasn't no Phil Nicoletti around. There wasn't no like, all right, you know, Jay Sexton and Ken Roczen battling and then Xbox on Sunday. Like, I mean, we raced on the racetrack, we raced to the airport, we raced to get our jet off the thing.
Oh, like, yeah. It was full on.
It was.
Hey, didn't it catch you guys out when Eli and Kenny were on the private jet together before that, like,
come at him?
There's no way I was like, would be on a private jet. Could you imagine me and Reedy on a private jet? I'm like, no
way. Like, I couldn't believe it, but that was like a sign of the times.
Is it a sign of the times?
But it's just different. It wouldn't have worked for me, at least, just because I'm like, this guy wants to wreck me and beat me and take money off the table for me. And there's no way I'm going to be friends with that guy. Didn't mean I didn't respect him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's too nice. I just go back to, we just live in a different time. The world has changed, things evolve, and it's just a different type of competitiveness. I mean, it was eat, sleep, breathe, win or nothing.
Yeah. And I think that translated, though, like that magic that we're talking about. I think that's what translates.
I know these guys want to win. They want to win.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, like, that's why I hated Chad, because like when I raced you, I knew exactly what I was getting. Chad was hard to beat because you never knew.
Listen, he was my best friend, and I didn't know what I was getting.
Yeah,
tell you right now.
But I probably that's why we. You know, see it differently, you know, because it is. And when you look at the riders out here, we call Hayden Deegan like more of an old school racer, you know, because he is more, you know, our back in our day, I would tell you on the cover of Racer X with my shirt off, like all my whole life is about January and I want to beat that dude. Like, you don't hear that now. Like, and so you knew I wanted to win, like, and I did everything, probably just like all these guys do, but you don't hear, like, so that personality is a lot different. That's the biggest thing in this era, but speed-wise, I mean, these guys are out there competing, but everything was about beating that dude.
If you don't win, you're last, basically. Straight up.
I mean, make a movie
it
about
was,
that.
It was like that.
Should make a movie about that.
I was like, why didn't you win? Why
we got another question here.
I'm like, well, I got...
Hey, how's it going? We're from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was gonna, get y'all to comment on talking about Chase and Jet a lot, but I think what was ignored this outdoor season was Malcolm, your little brother, his consistency, getting fourth and pushing it through and him being an ex-champion. I think in that third place position, I think he can really be a sleeper in this playoff series and get in there. And of course we got AP, who everybody loves, but besides that, I was kind of seeing who y'all got in that third position. Coming in from the outdoors, people riding good, the fact that you can do 3-3-5 or, you know, whatever, and at the end of it, and who y'all think is going to be in that, I guess, position.
Yeah, well, if Malcolm's a sleeper, he need to wake up. Yeah. No, I mean, for sure, racing outdoors, you can see the improvement. It was kind of, you know, sleeper-ish, kind of, like, he just got better and better, and I think you'll really notice his improvement next year during the Supercross season. Like, I suspect him, he'll have a better Supercross season just because he was out there. To go from, you know, round fifth place to eighth place to competing up here and beating Jet Lawrence, Chase Sexton, that's going to be a huge task. But overall, he'll be a better rider. So to me, I don't know. I mean, I think everybody has that mindset that there's three races left. They know every position is a lot of money. And so I can see it almost like Anaheim ones, like the heat races. These guys are racing like all out. And throughout a Supercross series, things are different. So Malcolm, he could be a sleeper. But I think you'll really see the improvement from the outdoors next year in Supercross just for finishing all the races and stuff.
I like that question. And I want to know from the rest of you who you think could be a sleeper, not even like third, but even second. Who do you guys like have your eye on and pinpointing
for me,
like,
this weekend?
And why
this weekend specifically? It's going to be about the start, and I asked Chase Sexton about starts during the press conference earlier today, because the way I look at the track is it's split start. There aren't whoops. There's not a lot of technicality to the track. And in the technical sections, you're not going to be able to pass anyway in them. So if you're not near the front positioning early on, it's going to be really difficult to move forward. So I think guys like Justin Cooper and some of the guys we're not necessarily thinking about,
there's your sleepers,
they
right
have
there.
A real chance. They have a real chance to be there because of the position they're going to put themselves in. They're going to be able to capitalize on the opportunity.
I mean, who do you think?
I just posted that on X and Instagram right now. So no,
that's
other,
your opinion.
No other writer is going to give you any insight tomorrow because you picked someone.
Yeah. Like, who do you think? I agree with you, like a star. But yeah. Who do you think will race their way into that second place?
I think Chase is going to have to.
I
agree.
I think that a guy like Kenny will race his way in up to the front in at least third. And I think a guy like Eli will.
Yeah.
I reckon Hunter Lawrence has got a lot of seconds this year.
100%.
He's a sleeper. 3 seconds through three rounds, like, just might mathematically be enough to do it. And, man, even the practice starts that the Hondas did, like, they have something going on
with those bikes. I want to see Hunter bounce back physically, though, right? Like, he looked...
He's got a good 20 minutes at the moment.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. Like, before we left for the break, I watched Google. He looked like he was hurting, right? Like, physically. And then...
Did you see that bike? Bike was a little rough on him.
Yeah, I did. But he recovered a lot. And then we went to Ironman, and I saw the same guy again. He just looked worn down by 28 races. That's the same guy I saw at Charlotte a year ago. I want to see... If he's full tilt, no problem. He'll be up front. He'll be on the podium tomorrow. But if he's that same guy where he's struggling late because of low energy, it's going to be a rough day.
Steve, do you think Lars has the whole shot button here for the Hondas? Because he does it all, right?
I talked to him earlier. He's got it. Yeah, okay. He's got it loaded.
So it's controlled by Lars' phone?
The new iOS starts? Is out. And it's fine, yeah.
So they got SMX
software.
No,
but for me, like, no whoops, right? Easy supercross track. Good starter.
Justin Cooper.
There's a gritty veteran out there from New York known to pull a few starts.
Oh, Phil's going to get third.
Who wants to see Phil get third?
There
we go.
Are you on his payroll?
I'm on his payroll.
I think you are on his payroll. Phil. Yo, we saw it in Chicago
last
year.
Shorter races. Yeah, no.
Known supercross star.
No whoops.
We got more fan questions here. Here we go.
Yeah. So my name's John. I'm from right here in Concord, North Carolina, 20 minutes up the road. Going back to the conversation about the Stu and RC, you were able to push it to 120%. How much do you think that was because the bikes weren't at the speed limit of the tracks yet? And, like, now it's a lot harder to push the Supercross that hard because it's just you're limited by how technical the tracks are and how fast the bikes are.
That's a really good analysis of what is happening. Yeah, the bikes are so fast. I think, though, the bikes are... Everybody has lockdown devices. Everybody is starting from a metal grate. There's so many more equalizers. The technique of using the clutch, getting off of dirt, has changed the game. So it makes it that much harder. And with the bikes being fast and so much torque coming out of corners, they're able to just do all the jumps pretty much all the time. So there's no separation.
Too,
so
right?
Like... You know, I knew if there was a gnarly triple coming out of the corner, I had to get the corner right. But now these guys, they just come out and just, brah, and they're gone, you know? So I think that's changed.
I think it's hard to overstate how much the ECUs and the fuel injection has changed.
Early carby four strokes, man. That's a scary era.
But all that power, like, I don't...
Dude.
I'm not an engine builder, but I don't think... The torque number and the horsepower numbers would blow you away, the difference, but the way they can use the power and get it to the ground and the acceleration curve is so much more because they can use all that power.
And just know nothing in the back of your mind. Like, really. Like, when do we really see issues with motorcycles? But, like, there was a lot of pops and cracks and splutters and farts back in your day.
You
like,
ever have
going through
problems
a rhythm
in your bike,
section,
Steve?
Like...
Dude.
I had a couple of...
Scary.
Yeah. Dude, there's times like...
Did you ride a four-stroke carburetor?
Yeah.
First Cowie was a carb?
Dude. I wouldn't even call it a four-stroke.
Until 2009 was the first Cowie one.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah.
Your 05? Your 05 wasn't fuel injected? Or your 06 wasn't fuel injected?
09 Cowie was the first one.
No, I'm trying to think.
Remember the on-offs? You had to be really gentle? Like, yeah.
Cliff White would be like, Turn the idle up. Lip the throttle in midair. Because when you land off that tabletop, it will bog out.
I think 10 Yamaha would have been the first one, right?
Yeah, the first one, yeah. JT knows what's up. Mechanic, yeah, whatever.
That's crazy.
Man, jeez. Yeah. I'm scarred permanently from carburetor days. I don't want to think about them.
Yeah, the four-stroke carbs are gnarly. I remember Goose just guys having those things laid out and like, dude, what is that?
We would look at you guys at Honda because we, you know, Yamaha's first guy with four-strokes, and then you guys came out with a much better bike. And we're looking at these Hondas and listening to them on the test tracks, and they're like, they don't burp or fart or nothing. Look at them. Yeah. They're perfectly jetted. And meanwhile, our guys are like, burr, burr, burr.
Poor Heath Voss.
Yeah.
Poor Heath. He was like the test dummy for every Yamaha carburetor setting.
Yeah, we sent Heath out to do a lot of testing on carburetor supercross.
Poor Heath, yeah. But no, I mean, I think the biggest thing with the fuel injection is more when the tracks get hard. You know, like even 09 when I raced Reedy, Vegas, I didn't know it then, but it was so much easier and he was so much better because of the fuel injection and because like it eliminates that really having to work the throttle a lot.
It's connected, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's instantly always connected.
Yeah, like it's going to do what it says it's going to do.
We have adjustability too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You didn't have that adjustability that he had.
And but sorry, Dan.
No, go for it.
I was just going to say, I think on the flip side of the, like obviously the ECU and the fuel injection is so much better, but if you go back to say an 07 Honda, Kiefer actually just did a brilliant test on the RacerX YouTube. But you go back to an 07 chassis to a 2025 and, like, they've gone softer. Well, I guess they've gone harder. Last year was a little bit softer. But the chassis are so much different now. Like, it really seems like what you guys missed out on carbies, you kind of gained a bit on the chassis side of things.
We did 120%. And the evolution of aluminum chassis and going from steel. Like, we just went through so many generations and little tricks and pieces of that we used to massage on the frames, you know, to get them to be a little more.
Yeah, I bet you guys massage the frames at Honda. We had some theories.
Did you?
You still have lots of theories.
I think unfortunately, here all massage was CNC.
When you were yelling at me at Salt Lake, I couldn't get a word in about your frame, but that's what I was trying to talk to
you about. Oh, you wanted to know what we were doing?
03? Yeah. Was that 03?
03,
yeah. I remember that. My dad was down there like, get him, Ricky, get him.
Your dad was trying to play peacemaker.
He's always like that. He was peacemaker like with Reed. And I remember like a few times I stuffed him. Dad be like, why you do that to him, Junior? Then he gets around me and be like, why didn't you do it back to him, you punk? Like, emotional. But yeah, I think... yeah, the bikes have gotten a lot better, and I don't think I mentioned earlier, the speed wise when I watched, didn't look like we were that slow. I think maybe the difference is you got more guys, so maybe the separation when me and Ricky raced, there was only like, you know, three of us really that had to worry about winning a race. Now you got like 10 good guys, so. Maybe the Jet Lawrence and Chase Sexton could be as dominant, but there's so many more good guys now that it just doesn't seem like that big of a gap. So,
and I just think there's so much data from like watching the career that you guys had to where it was like win or crash. You know what I mean? And then like following that your era, we had Villo, never crashed. Dungy, famously never crashed. Like, I think you guys caused a bit of a shift in terms of just like the mentality too, like what people were prepared to do to win championships.
GCOJS, you know? Laid out on the side of the track over there with Bodner, make you think differently too.
Whatever I do, I don't want to crush like James.
Be like that,
I don't
want
to crush like James.
I ain't trying to win that much.
We had one more fan question to take from the back. That's good stuff. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Nicole from China Grove, just 25 minutes up the road. You guys talked a little bit about lining up on the gate and knowing some of those riders that when they got to the gate and they saw you, they knew they weren't going to win for that day. So my little guy rides a 65. When he gets to that gate and he sees those elite riders as a privateer, he's automatically in his head that says, I'm not going to win today. So what advice do you give those guys that aren't those elite riders lining up against those as a privateer? How do you get them out of that?
Start a podcast.
Dude.
Because that's
the great equalizer.
That was rough. No,
we're on the same level of these two right now.
I think I'll go back to one of the things my mom always taught me when I was a young kid, just like yours. She always just told me, you go out and you do the best that you can do. And if the best that you can do is fifth, then you must get fifth. But what you can't do is if you're good enough to get fifth, you can't fall down and get eighth. So you go out, you take your fifth, and then we'll go on and we'll work on where we need to be better. We'll see where the competition is better than you. And we'll work on that during the week. And if all you can do is do your best. And sometimes it's enough and sometimes it's not. And so that's what I would tell my kid, you know, if he was lined up and he's on the 65 class. I'm like, dude, just go out there and do your best. And then we'll work to improve each weekend.
Can we look, find Race Direct's fault? Did you ever finish fifth in a race ever? And you're like, where's this mythical fifth?
I was going to say something, but
hell hath no fury as Ricky coming back and getting fifth. I'm just going to tell you, I was there
cool.
in those days. And
he was cool.
To his point, though, he was a lot better than fifth. So he shouldn't have been getting fifth.
That is true. Just finish where you're supposed to finish.
James there is like, go. What's fifth?
Well...
What's fifth?
You get a lot of fifths.
I mean, what
would... fifth
I
want to know...
I'd like to... What, like, yeah, what, answer her question, and then I got one for you.
Yeah, my I didn't get the same advice as you did, but... No worries.
It's all good.
Differently. Hey, just try. But, no, I mean, I would say, I mean, the mind's a powerful thing, really. I mean, you keep things in perspective. All these guys out here are the best... Less than 1% of the people in the world can do what they do out there. And your son can beat, you know, billions of people on a motorcycle. Just keep things in perspective. Like, that's what you think, that's what's gonna happen. And I feel like even out here, a lot of this comes down to not talent, it's really upstairs, mentally. I used to have a teammate, Kyle Regal, and I told these guys his story. During the test week, when we were testing during the week, the guy would be faster than me. Like all week long, hated it, couldn't stand it. He would go to the race on Saturday and not even make the night show. You know, not even talking about LCQ, worried about getting chiseled. No, he couldn't even make the night show to get chiseled. So, but it was a mental thing. Whatever flipped between Thursday at the test track and going to the race, maybe it was the same thing that he just felt like he couldn't beat him. But I would just say, I mean, it's really upstairs. I mean, you can kind of think your way into a lot of good situations or bad situations as well.
Do you what is one thing when you were little like that age that Big James would get most frustrated with you about at a race?
If I quit or didn't try.
Quit or didn't try.
Yeah. I mean, he was always frustrated on a lot of things, but
yeah. Did you have some long motorhome rides home?
Yeah, I had a few of those, but the one thing that my dad always instilled in me is never giving up.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. And 100%. So, you know, he would get upset about, you know, whatever. He would be bummed, yeah, if we didn't win, but he never got mad at me for not winning. He got mad if I didn't try, you know? And so, yeah, I try to teach that to my kids. Doesn't really work, but I think that's more of an indictment at me as a parent more than anything else. Soft kid, you don't know what's up, but yeah. Anyways, yeah.
There we go. Good advice. We got a couple more minutes here. We haven't talked 250 class at all. Hayden Deegan is dominant right now in the 250s. He's won the Pro Motocross title. He won this thing last year, and he's a bit of a trash talker. I want to get your opinion. Well, first of all, I actually go to you. In our line of work, honestly, it's kind of helpful. He gives talking points and drama. So when you hear that, do you actually internalize it in that way? Like, ooh, this is going to be good for content? Or are you actually just like, oh, man, you just have your personal opinion? How do you look at that? Because I believe part of what they do, not all of it, part of it is they are creating talking points for everyone, fans, us, everybody else.
Yeah, I think that there's a level at which, like, they're playing the game. And there's a level at which they should play the game. You know, and I think that you guys played the game in a different way in terms of, like, the rivalry, no talk, you know, like, you had walls up. So I just think that you're in a sport, essentially, it's a game. And I think they're playing the game. Like, Hayden knows that he can say things on the podium, and if he goes out and backs it up, like, I know he gets in people's head. I know that it upsets these guys. I know, like, for how much that he's talked, how much smack that he's talked, where's the retaliation? Nowhere.
Yeah.
So he's just fully got these guys, like, he's just mean mugging these dudes 24/7. No one's had the guts to, like, stand up and react. So it's like, he's playing the game. It's working.
Maybe they're trying, though.
Yeah, maybe
they
just
can't. You know they're trying.
I don't think they're. I think they're all scared of retaliation.
No.
You think I'm scared
of what?
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
No,
what
one's
are they scared of?
Like, social media?
No,
YouTube,
like,
comments? What are they fearing?
No one gets near him on the track. Tom Vial at Colorado, he should have cleaned his clock. He was he was right there for a part, for a big, big pass to make a statement on Hayden. Didn't make it.
Yeah, but he's got you. There's other ways you can make a statement rather than cleaning her clock. So, I mean, that guy's a two-time MXGP2 champ. Like, that's a different kind of etiquette.
So I think he's going to eventually run into someone because he's angering people with those comments, right? And he knows it, and he's getting away with it, and it's working for him to this point. But he's going to run into somebody where angering them makes them better, and that's going to be a problem, right? Yeah. I don't know who it's going to be.
For sure.
Right? He's going to run into one of these 450 guys, whether it's Sexton or who, along in his career, as he continues to progress. Someone's going to feed off of that, and it's going to be the worst thing he could do. He just hasn't ran into that yet. And I know because I wasn't at that level, but if you made me angry, I rode better. Like, that's the worst thing you could do. You would want to calm me down, and I would be worse. He just hasn't found that guy yet that will retaliate. Jason Anderson, Justin Barcia, that's not the approach you want to take with those guys, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So you have a different side. You think it is, they're not retaliating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying they're scared. I'm not saying that, but I think
smoke.
The only way to really say anything, I mean, Hayden's been beat this year. I mean, he got 11th a few motos ago, and then, so it's not like he's as good as he is. It's not like he's pulling what he did the first moto at Buzz Creek on these guys, like 30 seconds out front every race. Like, but he is talking his way into, I would say winning. He's got to go out there and work, but talking is helping him. And I think at some point, like, these guys got to, I mean, just take him out. Like, you got to. Just to let him know that, look, you might not beat me. I might not beat you. But this ain't gonna happen, you know, and I think it would change it. And so I give the kid credit because he's figured out a way really on the motorcycle, but also he's using, just like every guy, they train harder, they try to come up with different ways and try to every inch. He's figured out that by talking and it's working, whether the field believes it or not, he believes it. And
he believes it.
Yeah, and that's all that matters. And I think that's when he races. He races with an ego and an attitude that kind of like we used to have.
I think it's something different than and this isn't a slight towards anyone that he's racing with, but you're saying what you think of his competitors, and I know how I would think if I was racing him, and I'd be like, dude, bring it on. I want a piece of you.
Yeah, and I just don't think anyone's like really
and
stood
I know
up to
that,
that you
like,
know?
I'm sure you wanted to take it to me every single time, no matter what I said. That's why I didn't try to say anything to you. I didn't want to make it harder on myself. Like, dude, you wanted to tee up on me every single weekend, just like I wanted to beat you. Yeah. I wasn't scared of racing you. But I think we're different. I think our mindset is different.
He's going to race someone who is confrontational eventually, right? Yeah. Like, right now, it seems like the guys he's engaging with want to diffuse
it. But what happens if he likes that?
No, it's fine.
You
I'm just saying,
I mean?
But he's
that's
going.
That's what's
going
to be so
but
great.
But
for
they're
going
to tee him up or something. That just hasn't happened, is all I'm
right?
saying.
Right? That's going to be awesome to watch.
He's going to continue on. It's not going to deter him or anything. I'm just saying that moment yet. Yeah. Where
RJ's,
someone's
RJ's
like,
ready.
RJ's ready.
Absolutely.
RJ might be ready tomorrow.
That moment is coming.
His danger zone comment on the post, that was brilliant. That was so understated.
That time will come, and it's going to be awesome to watch, right?
Yeah, RJ's ready.
I think Deegan's up for it. Like, he is ready for it, but that moment will come.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, I actually think those guys, they don't like it, and he says stuff. They do try to go race them, but truthfully, there's ways of winning, and I think the only way to kind of stop that and make him think is really physical. Like, you gotta tap him a little bit, you know, just give him a little tap. And so, but I think it upsets them. I mean, I've had a chance. I talked to Levi on the plane home. Like, they don't like it, you know, but... Again, they might be all out, Hayden might be all out, and they just might get beat because Hayden's better, but he's still going to continue to talk that until you say, you know what, if I can't win today, that talk is
you're definitely
stop.
Not winning, yeah. right? Yeah. Exactly. I can't win, but you're definitely not winning.
He's young, too. He's young.
Well, and it's got to be fun, you know? Like, if you put yourself in his position, he gets up, he can talk a bit of smack, he can do the, you know, like, be
totally.
Himself, play that character. The fans respond, either positively or negatively, but they're responding, and his dad knows how the game works. And it's like, you can be a nice guy when you retire at the end of the career and just be like, oh, I was playing it.
Well,
I
have a comment for that. And I want to ask both of these two. I know we run out of time here. I was told by the late Josh Demuth, right? He's multi-time Arena Cross champion. And I would always ask him, like, everybody here likes you. You know, like, you don't get taken out. Everybody's smashing everybody. It was like carnage every time the gate dropped. Nobody was hitting him. And I always asked him, and he's just like, it's a lot easier to win championships when everybody likes you. It's a lot easier. So does that ever come into play where you need friends? Like, everybody can't hate you on the starting line at some
Dude.
Point.
You were Chad Reed's best friend, and I always tried to kiss your ass because I knew.
I knew you were, though.
No disrespect.
I knew you were, though.
We were probably going to lap you, and I'm like, I need this dude to get the hell out of my way.
See, that's what you got to do with my approach. You just got to land on him a couple times. then you don't have to worry about none of that. Yeah, so,
no, like, you can't do that.
That's great.
Yeah,
we're out of time. That's an awesome way to end it. That's an awesome way to end it.
My
don't
drop.
Lie on me. Thanks. Round of applause, everybody. You guys are great. Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir.
That's the first ever podcast mashup. Tell your friends. Come visit us in Texas. We'll do it again next Friday.